Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now tuned to the Sitting in the Park show. Today I have a very special show because I have a really cool interview planned and with a bunch of people who are in the studio, and one of which who is on the phone, and they have a lot of history, so they will be talking about all of their music. The people who are up in here, they recorded in a group that recorded under two names, one of which was the Antennas and one of which was the Squires, and they recorded a lot of other music. And one of the people, Billy McGregor, recorded as a solo artist and wrote and produced a lot of other music. So first of all, thanks everybody for being here, and I was wondering if everybody could first introduce yourselves.
I'm Billy McGregor.
Bob Bailey.
And Shirley, could you introduce yourself?
And I'm Shirley Wright.
Okay. And so I guess we'll go person by person, and I will ask each person about, I guess, where they're originally from and how they got started with music. So I'll start off with Shirley, I guess. Shirley, are you originally from Chicago?
No, I'm originally from Mississippi, and I've been here since I was 2 years old.
Okay, and how did you get involved with music?
Well, I was I used to go to the center over in the Stateway Gardens and just rehearsal around with music, and Billy Williams came in, and when he was taking an interview, he was looking for a female vocal singer, and he picked me and the Antennas. That's how I met the Antennas from there.
Okay, so
Vegas from there.
Okay, so, and what year was that?
That was in '62.
Okay, and Robert, how did you get involved with music?
Let's go back a few years before the Antennas. I came from church originally. I sung with a couple of gospel groups. One was the Holy Travelers, and another one was the Travelers, and we worked out of Chicago, and we covered the Midwest.
When were you with those groups?
Back in the late 50s, early 60s. George McGregor, I met. He was also singing in a gospel group. That's George was the Billy McGregor's brother. George and I figured that we had, as two people, had a good sound doing background music. So we waited until Billy got out of the Army so we could get together. That would make three of us. And we also had his other brother. So the McGregor brothers and me were singing together. And we, George's wife and Billy's girlfriend came up with the name, and my wife, Mary Bailey, came up with the name Antennas. Everybody liked it, so that's how we came up with that name. But in 61, 62, we sounded so good together, so we decided to try to venture out and do something professionally.
So you're saying the Antennas formed in 61, 62?
Yes.
And the original lineup were three of the McGregors, you and
Les Shirley was a single singer by herself, and together we sounded good, you know? So we started backing Shirley on some of her songs.
But originally you said Billy's girlfriend was a member?
No. I said she helped come up with the name.
Right.
Antennas.
So Billy's girlfriend helped come up with a name.
Yeah.
Antennas.
Yeah.
So, and Billy, how'd you get involved with music?
Well, actually, the whole family is musically inclined. So, and then in Alaska, I was over there for a while, you know, and I had a group going over in Alaska, too. I was on the All Army Entertainment Show over there, you know.
Why were you in Alaska?
I was military.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I was military, and I've always been into music, just playing around. Anywhere I see a piano, I start playing and writing songs. And like I said, my whole family is into music. My daddy was a trumpet player, you know. I was 2 years old when he died. I don't even know him, you know. So that's how it all got started, you know. Came from a very religious family, too, you know. I was born in Alabama and raised up in Evanston. So that's it.
Okay, so when did you move to Evanston?
54.
Okay, and Shirley said she was living in state around Stateway Gardens, which is like 35th and State.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert, is that where you were living?
Yes.
And so how did you end up meeting Billy and his brother?
Well, like I told you, yeah. Billy's brother used to sing gospel also, but he was with another group. And I met him, and we waited until his brother came home because he told me my brother could sing all of that.
but I'm saying that they didn't stay near you, so you just saw them around town.
George and I stayed in Stateway Gardens also. Yeah.
Okay.
That's his brother, George.
So George didn't live in Evanston. George lived
no,
in Stateway.
No, just me, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the antennas formed in 62?
Somewhere around in there, yeah.
61?
61, right, yeah.
Was that the year you got
a 59 I got out.
But
60, yeah.
Yeah.
And you had a third brother that was in the antenna?
Yeah, James, he's deceased now, God rest his soul, you know. Okay. No, he used to rehearse with us, but he wasn't really serious about singing with us, you know. So Bob, George, and myself, we went on to do things, you know.
So originally the antennas, like you were saying, your brother and Robert was singing gospel. What made you move to secular music?
Money.
Hey, money.
So when his brother, James, decided he didn't want to go pro, we had to add a fourth guy.
Yeah.
And his name is Jerry Royal.
What's his last name?
Royal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you specifically wanted to become professional, so that's why you moved to secular music.
Yeah, but we were sounding pretty good doing some of the material that was out at that time.
So what were some of the material you were doing?
Well, I have a background in popular music.
Right.
I was learning songs like "Tell Me Why" by the Four Aces and
Canadian
Sunset and "Love Is a Many Splendid Thing." Billy sings that. And he thought that ought to be. So what we did was get a mixture.
Yeah.
So
versatile, very versatile group.
Yeah.
Very versatile group.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then you hooked up with Shirley. So the antennas existed before Shirley, and then you hooked up with Shirley. Is that what happened?
Well, we were around in the same area there, so we'd be standing around singing harmonies and stuff. So
we used to rehearse at the Stateway Gardens Field House.
Right.
That's where we met Shirley.
Yeah, that's when Billy Williams discovered us there.
Right.
Actually, he discovered us over Marshall Thompson and his group. It wasn't the shot. We beat them out.
They were the Desideros back then?
May have been. I don't know. But Billy Williams, out of all the groups that he auditioned,
Chicago.
Yeah, we won.
Okay.
He took us to Las Vegas to the Riviera. We worked there for a while.
Shirley, do you remember how you ran into the antennas? Just was it in that?
Yes. We were doing an audition at the center, and so Billy Williams, he picked out the antennas, and he picked me out. And then when we got to Vegas, he made us a group, and he called it Shirley and the Squires. When Bob was there, was with Don
Clay?
Rick, right, when we recorded.
Billy Williams, yeah.
It was Shirley and the Squires. They had it. And it was the harmony was so tight, but the Billy them used to do a job on me. They'd give me to write a song so quick, but I got them. I went up there and learned it real quick and came back down, and we got down. So it was a lot of fun. Before I started singing, I used to sing gospel too, and I was in the choir, and then I had a little spiritual group too. So I've always sang.
What were the gospel groups you were with?
The gospel group was named the Shelton Airs.
And did you ever do any recording with them?
No, I only recorded with the antennas. The Squires, we called it, from the antennas and Squires. So, and we had a good hit, didn't we? Not to go anywhere.
So you're saying the way that you got with the group was that Billy Williams came to Stateway Gardens to audition people to take to Vegas.
Exactly.
And he picked you, and then he picked the antennas as the backing group for you.
No, he picked the antennas for a group. he picked me for a female vocal singer.
And then you ended up just being together.
And then he hooked us up at
the show together, so we ended up singing behind her also.
So when did you go to Vegas? What year was that?
It was in 62.
And can you talk about what you did in Vegas? Were you on a review with Billy Williams?
Yes, I was. We was in the Starlet Room at the Riviera, and we did 4 shows a night, and always had to do encores. It was real good. It was real good. But we did 4 shows a night.
What type of material did you do in Vegas?
I did some of Etta James' music, and they told me that she was going to kill me. Yeah. Something got a hold on me. And every time I did it, I had to do an encore. And then after that, we started to took us around to all of the different recording companies, and they all wanted to sign us up. And that's how we got started. We came back to the city, back to Chicago. One of my daughters got sick, and that brought me back. And I went back, and I just came back.
Okay, and what type of material did the Antennas do on the Vegas Review?
The Antennas wrote "I'm in a Need for Love," that I sang "Be Yourself," "Drip Drop." Those are the songs that they wrote for me that I learned and I recorded.
But in Las Vegas, what types of material did the Antennas do when you were performing? Yeah, like Billy.
Tell Me Why.
Yeah.
And Love's Ministering the Thing and Canadian Sunset. You know, voices and all these this kind of stuff.
And to mix it up a little, we did "You Bang Ye Baby." And,
oh yeah.
You know, that's rock.
We did Rompas Street stuff, like New Orleans stuff, everything.
Show tune.
Yes.
And how long was your booking in Vegas?
What, 3 months?
Yeah.
Yep. About three months. Yeah.
So when you came back, and you came back to Chicago right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your first record that you ended up releasing was on a label called Clay, and it was a song called "Fujiyama Mama" and "Be Yourself."
Exactly.
So what's this?
Not the first one.
So you're saying that
wasn't the first one. The first one was "I'm in the Need for Love."
Really? You had a version of "I'm in the Need for Love" released?
Yeah. That was the one that was really selling. Well, "Fujiyama Mama" was good too, but I think what they did, they just pushed "I'm in the Need for Love" more. And because I had people to come to me, they was trying to get it and whatnot. So, but Bob never did "Fujiyama Mama," and I made the dance up for it.
Okay. Do you know? Well, the flip side of "Fujiyama Mama"
is be yourself.
Yourself,
yeah.
So do you know? But you said you released "I'm in the Need for Love" also.
Yeah, that was wasn't that the first release?
Well, the first release that I know about is "Fujiyama Mama" and "Be Yourself," which came out on the Clay label.
Right.
"I'm in the Need for Love" was first.
Do you know what label that came out on?
Wasn't that on Clay?
The record that I own is the Antennas as "Fujiyama Mama" and "Be Yourself."
That was first. Yeah.
Well, which one was "I'm in Need of Love"?
We cut that on another label.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was on Boss, right?
Huh? You don't have
that. That came out on Constellation.
Constellation.
It was the flip of "Drip Drop."
Right.
Okay.
But anyways, let me play. So "Fujiyama Mama," there's a story behind it. It was like a novelty kind of today it would not be a very PC record, but it was a novelty record about an Asian girlfriend.
Right.
So, and it came out in 1962 on the Clay label. What's the story behind it? First of all, who ran the Clay label?
Don Clay.
Yeah.
So who was Don Clay?
He's a producer at the time.
Yeah.
Was he
Rick Williams was partners.
Mm. And were they based in Evanston?
Yeah.
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 And how'd you get hooked up with them?
Where did we meet Don? Where did we meet him? That's a long story.
He must have heard us.
He heard us and
somewhere. And he asked us to come into the, you know, and talk with him, and then made arrangements for a studio.
We may have been at a studio audition, and he was there, and that's how we ran into him, you know.
And but did you record it in Chicago? Because the label was says New York, but it was recorded in Chicago.
Chicago, yeah. Everything yeah. in Chicago.
Okay, and there's a story behind the record Fujiyama Mama, right? What's the story?
I spent about 2 years in Japan, and I was a very close associate with a young lady who was very small. And I thought about her, and I sat down and I wrote a song. And I, you know, just made it, put it in a jungle beat. And you know the rest.
Okay, well, let me play the record so people know what we're talking about, and then we can talk a little bit more. So this is The Antennas with their very first record released. This is 1962.
Mm-hmm.
And this is called Fujiyama Mama.
In the land of the rising sun, the country known as Japan, when a man has a Ichiban Ocho-san, which means a number one woman, he usually refers to her as a Fujiyama Mama.
Well, I got a Fujiyama Mama, just as swinging as she can be. Well, now she eats gohan for breakfast, and at noon she sips on tea. Well, my little Fujiyama Mama, she's a little over 4 feet tall. Well, and the way she really, really, really loves me, I don't want any other at all. Well, my little Fujiyama Mama, she's as swinging as she can be. Well, she eats gohan for breakfast, and at noon she sips on tea. My little Fujiyama Mama, she's a little all of 4 feet tall. And the way she really, really woo loves me, I don't want any other at all.
Please, this is the end of our story told to you in song. Moral being, if you have little woman with big heart, do not treat her wrong. Thank you, please. Sayonara.
Okay, that was just The Antennas with their very first record called Fujiyama Mama, and that was released in 1962 on the Clay label. And if you're just tuning in, I have in the studio members of The Antennas, and that was a very sort of, it was a novelty record, which was the type of record that was popular at the time, like the type of record that the Coasters did, and that fell out of fashion and probably very un-PC, like not appropriate for the time. And interesting that it was actually based on a real story that Robert was just telling about, that he was actually based in like in the Korean War. You were stationed in Japan.
Yes.
And it was based on a real person. But actually, the other side of the record, which hopefully we'll have time to play, is a fantastic record called Be Yourself.
You wrote that.
You're saying Billy wrote that. Yeah. Do you remember anything about the session? Like who played on that session?
A couple of people. Three of them. Was Rockman on? King Kolax
on trumpet.
On trumpet, and Al Dunkins on the drums, and a lefty bass on guitar.
Yeah. Right.
And You got to give him the rest, Bob.
That's the only three I remember.
Yeah.
Do you remember where it was recorded?
Universal.
And you?
Yeah.
Did it get any play?
Yeah. Yeah, it played. Yeah.
And did
I
it get?
I think at the time, yeah, WGES, didn't it? What station was Al Benson on?
WVON.
WVON.
I think he was on WGES at the time.
Was
it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it did get play in Chicago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did it get play in other cities too, do you know?
Yeah, Gary and places like that. It kind of, the little noise that it made, it did it on its own.
It started to spread.
Yeah, you know.
And just when it started to spread.
I don't think there was a lot of money behind it. I think it just took off on its own.
So did the antenna start to do shows around that record after the record came out?
Yeah, a few, yeah.
And so the antennas, soon afterwards, did you sign to Boss Records? Because I saw on your publicity photo it says Boss Records, which I know Don Clay was involved with that.
Yeah, Bob, I think so.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
And because you released a record where you backed Perkily Moses.
Well, he started to use it, our harmony, you know, our background.
Right.
For people who didn't have any wonder background.
Yeah.
Like now they get soul singers, they go down to the Union and they get three people, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You come to town, they know who sings what, and they just get them to back the artists.
Well, our technology is, they got a machine that you can sing, and then two other voices will sing with you, you know.
Yeah.
So you're saying they used you as backing singers at Boss Records?
Right, exactly, yeah.
But you not only did backing vocals on the record, did you start doing shows with Perkily Moses also?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay, yeah. So you did a record with Perkily called The Docks. Is that right?
And so when Perk went out, you know, at the time we used to do a lot of pantomimes.
Right.
And like the jock, he'd go in and they'd have a show and they'd play your record and give you the mic and you have to do a lip sync.
Lip sync.
So that's probably what Perk was doing.
That's what I did on Don Kennedy's show.
Yeah.
Soul Train, Mr. Shy.
Okay, but you do sing on that Perk song.
Oh, yeah.
The Docks.
Yeah.
And so on that song, do you remember what the story was? Like, had he just left the Eldorados? What was the story?
Good question.
Yeah, it is.
I wouldn't even venture to say what he had done before, you know.
We old, Bob.
Okay. So you sing backup on the record, which hopefully we'll have time to play. But one thing that's interesting is you also changed your name soon after that to the Squires. So what's the story with that? Whose idea was it to change the name to the Squires?
Well, here's the bottom line. They needed some backup singers for Shirley. And they thought, well, if this record does something, we're going to need somebody to hit the road with it. And so we were going to sing under that name, the Squires. That was more or less a studio decision.
Who's
decision? Well, Don Clay was involved in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rick Williams did a little speaking on that, too. They got together on, you know, collaborated together.
Because one thing that's weird is they actually released a record by a group called the Squires, and the track was called Girls and It's Time, but you were telling me that that's not you singing on it at all.
Right.
But then they made your name the Squires.
They probably owned the rights for the name Squires. See, what's happening is, if you had a copyright on a name, you could, cover yourself and give it to anybody.
Right.
Okay, so they first had the name and gave it to some other group, and then they gave it to you?
That's probably,
that's probably what happened.
So, were you telling me before that there was some idea behind the name, like you were supposed to, like, be real, like, kind of...
Country Squires? Yeah. Well, they had already decided what they were going to do. They were going to put us in some sharp clothes and back Shirley.
Right.
Okay.
On gigs, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know if the cane was going to be included.
So did you start doing, was it more of like a touring thing? Or
yeah,
or
well, yeah, they were going to set up a tour for us.
Okay, well, let me, so, and this was all through Don Clay and Rick Williams.
Yes.
Okay, well, so let me play, so that first record you did as the Antennas was through Don Clay, and then the second record you did, which was Behind Perk Lee, was also through Don Clay.
Okay.
Let me play that record, which was called The Docks,
okay,
and then we'll talk a little bit more. So this is Perk Lee Moses of the Eldorados, backed by the Antennas, and this is called The Docks. Okay, that was just Perkley Moses, backed by the Antennas, with a track called The Docks, and that came out first on the Boss label, which was owned by Rick Williams and Don Clay, and then it got leased to the USA label, so it actually came out twice. And you guys were telling me that that was just a studio thing, that you guys didn't do shows or anything with Perkley.
Correct.
And you don't remember if you backed any other artists on the label. Okay. So after that record, you left Boss Records, and you released a record on Constellation Records called I'm in a Need and Drip Drop.
Please play one of those. I haven't heard them in so long.
Yeah. Shirley was saying that. But both sides of those that record are excellent. I'll play both sides of the record. Drip Drop is my favorite side, and Shirley was saying her favorite side is I'm in a Need. Is that right, Shirley?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll definitely play both sides of the record. Do you remember what happened? Did you break your ties with Don Clay at that point? Or do you remember how you got to Constellation or what the story was?
No, I don't.
But you definitely took on the name The Squires at that point.
Yeah, I don't know how the only thing I remember is when the Antennas was going to back me, and like he said, you know, he was supposed to dress up and everything, and they introduced us a couple of times as Shirley and The Squires. So I can't remember from there no more than the songs coming out and they were being played every day, off and on all day.
Where were some of the places?
Lucky Cordell, E. Rodney Jones, Purvis Band, and more. It was Lucky Cordell, E. Rodney Jones, and Purvis Band. I remember them. Mm-hmm. And Herb Dent.
Where were some of the places that you were doing shows?
Well, we did one at the Burning Spear. We went around. Billy, where was that on the... It was a little place that we did, because we did one with Mary Wells. Mm-hmm.
We did a show at, what's this place on the 62nd Cottage Grove?
That's what it was. It was the Burning Spears.
No, the other one, the big dance hall, Grand Ballroom.
Trianon Ballroom.
We were there with...
Lloyd Price, wasn't it?
Lloyd Price. Yeah. Right? At the time he had... what's the big hit he had?
Stacker Lee? No, Stacker Lee.
What was it? Personality?
Yeah.
I remember the orchestra was Red...
Red Saunders.
Red Saunders.
He used to do all the Regal gigs. He'd play the music for all the Regal.
Right.
Now drummer, too. Yeah.
Right? And you did a show with Mary Wells?
Yes.
And also... Lloyd Price, is that it?
Yeah, Mr.
Gene Chandler.
Was that at the Regal when you was with his?
That was at the Burning Spear, wasn't it, Bob?
Okay.
No, that one was at
where was that?
Trianon, 62nd and Cottage.
Yeah, the big ballroom up there.
And at your shows, what were your shows like? Like Shirley was always up front, and the group was backing her.
More or less, we were together, man. We all had mics, front line.
Yeah.
It was different from some of the others at that time, you know.
So did Shirley sing lead on most of the songs?
50%.
Yeah.
And what can we say all the members again and what part each person sang?
It varies.
Okay.
It varies sometimes, you know. I sing second tenor, baritone, whatever need be, you know.
The same here.
Yeah.
Ditto.
Yeah.
Okay, so singing on the records again was Shirley, and what was her last name Wright at the time?
No, it was Shelton.
Shelton.
Shirley Shelton.
Okay.
Shirley Shelton,
yes. Okay, and then it was Billy McGregor, George McGregor.
Jerry Collins.
Jerome Royal.
Jerome Royal. And Robert Bailey.
Okay.
And the group was very versatile. You mentioned about parts. Okay.
Yes, we were.
Very versatile.
Okay.
Whatever needed to be, anybody could sing
whatever
any part
of it. If I led a song, they were there. You know, I'd say, do this.
Harmony didn't come no closer.
No.
We go up against anybody on the harmony.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you have a bass? Did one of you sing bass?
He could do it also.
Yeah, right.
Bob.
<That's laughs> <Cinderella.
laughs> Yeah, right.
And did you guys ever travel? I know initially you did Vegas.
Peppermint West, Los Angeles. You want some of the bigger clubs, right?
Yeah. You went to Billy Vaughn's house and auditioned for him.
How about the pool, right?
He had a studio in his backyard. Billy Williams took us there for an audition.
You know, okay. People with a lot of money have all kinds of functions around in the backyard, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
California.
Okay.
Yeah. We also, Tahoe, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Peppermint West Tahoe, Billy Vaughn's place.
Yeah.
He's the director of a 98-piece orchestra, so we felt kind of... It took the time. He recorded some stuff on us, but we couldn't get it released because we had contractual problems with some of our people. I won't call any names.
When was that?
In 63.
Yeah.
Okay.
64.
So was when you did shows in Chicago, those places you described, they were more like R&B type shows, right?
Yeah.
But when you went to Vegas, it was more like a pop type show, right?
Whatever. We could do this group was like the Platters in a sense.
If something came out, we would sing it.
That's right.
Okay?
That's
about
man. We didn't back up from nothing.
Was it your goal to become like a pop act?
Yeah. Oh man, this. I don't know how to tell you.
Standards, you know, we lived by the top 40, man.
Okay.
Yeah. because a lot of people couldn't do that. You know, they didn't have the versatility. But thank God, you never leave them out of the picture. We had it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me play one of your songs. I'm going to play Drip Drop, and I promise I'll play I'm in a Need before the interview's over. But I really like this song. This is my favorite song that you guys did. I'll play Drip Drop, and then we could talk some more. So this is Shirley and Her Squires, and this got released on Constellation Records, I think around 1964.
He played piano on this song.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is called Drip Drop.
They say that love is so strange. I think that love is just a game. If I knew what love was, I would turn off my tears goodbye.
Okay, that was just Shirley and Her Squires with Drip Drop, and that came out around 1963, 1964 on the Constellation label out of Chicago. Did that record get any play in Chicago?
Oh, yeah.
Which side got played?
They did pretty good on both sides.
Well, first they broke I'm in the Need.
Right.
Rodney Jones.
That's right. Yeah.
Was that your
cats, man? They was burning me. Mm-hmm. Butterball Crane.
Was that bigger than the Antennas record?
I think so. Yeah.
So that was that bigger than the Perk Lee record also?
Yeah.
So that was your biggest hit that you did as a group?
Right, I think so.
Yeah.
And
of course we have no physical way to tell because of the finances which didn't show up.
Yeah, nobody got.
You go, Bob.
So that record got released, and did you guys, and you guys talked a little bit about your touring, did you guys ever do any TV shows?
We did Ted Mack Original Amateur Hour before we even recorded the record.
Well,
are you familiar with Ted Mack?
No, can you talk about what that was?
It was an amateur show like Ed Sullivan.
Yeah, Ed Sullivan.
We came back from Vegas. Came back from Vegas and auditioned for that, and then we came in second place too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ted Mack came on every Sunday, I believe it was.
Every Sunday.
Yeah.
Well, so it was a local Chicago show.
No, nationally. Nationally.
What channel was it on?
I can't say that, but you can put it up on the internet once you get home tonight.
Well,
it was on CBS.
Okay.
On CBS. Yeah. It was a regular show on CBS on Sunday evenings at 4:30. Yeah.
And what year were you on?
We came from Vegas.
62.
Yeah.
And well, it had to be 63. We didn't get back until that.
Right,
Christmas.
Right.
And what year did you? I mean, where did you go to record for it? Was it in L.A.?
No. We did on the north side, in pretty much in it. Yeah, in the Rush Street area.
So it was recorded in Chicago, but broadcast nationally.
Right. Yeah.
So and you sang live on the show.
Yeah.
You appear as the antennas on the show?
Yes. Yeah. They wrote up a nice arrangement. Same arrangement. They wrote up a nice arrangement for us.
Do you remember what you sang?
What did we sing? Wait a minute.
Shirley in it too.
Yeah, it could be.
What was it, Shirley?
Shirley should know what it is. What was it, Shirley?
If I'm not mistaken, it was Drip by Drip. Was that it?
No, we did one of Billy Williams' tunes.
Oh, we did?
Okay. Yeah, on the Ted Mack show.
Oh, nice. Sometime I get a little...
No, we didn't do that one. We did one of Billy Williams' numbers.
Them Their Eyes.
Them Their Eyes. Yeah.
That's it. Them Their Eyes. That's what it was. Yeah.
And one thing to ask is, were you guys known in Stateway Gardens as like a local Stateway group, or did you guys perform
They knew us.
Okay.
They knew us. We actually started out singing at a little theater group at a YMCA at 37
exactly.
Wabash, right?
Uh-huh.
Little theater group. We go there every Tuesday, and they have talent shows. We were top dogs.
Yeah. So Billy,
I'm bragging, you know, but it was just that way.
So you were living in Evanston. Were you coming down to Stateway all the time?
I had moved to Chicago at that time, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but then were Rick and Don Clay all the way up in Evanston, so when you dealt with them, you had to go back up there?
No, you know, they were originally from Evanston, so I don't think they were living in Evanston at the time we recorded.
Okay, so everything was in Chicago.
Everything had moved, you know.
Okay, so that ended up being your last record, I'm in a Need and Drip Drop. So what was the story? Like, how long did the group stay together after that?
Well, like you said, it was a family thing. I don't know. And then Don shot his head and hit me with that. The song that I did, Mr. Shy, I was teaching the song to Ruby Andrews. It wouldn't have been Mr. Shy. It would have been another title, okay? But the same words would have been there. It was a different title. And Don liked the way I sing it better. And then he said, why don't you sing it? And that's how I ended up doing Mr. Shy.
So you left to go solo, and then the rest of the group kind of left?
Well, we was like this anyway, you know.
So what was happening? Was the rest of the group kind of going on to pursue the rest of their careers at that point?
Yeah, because of management. Yes. Bad decisions by management.
Yes. That's what happened. I'm in a Need had took the flight, and everybody was coming trying to find out how could they get it, but it was a big thing. I was like, whoa!
Yeah.
But like he said, it was bad management.
I talked to a couple of record shop owners, and they told me that they tried to get the wholesaler to bring the records to them, and they weren't available because they weren't getting the press.
Exactly.
That means the money must have went south.
Right.
Consequently, we had to, you know, starve in the north.
Okay. Yeah, I think it must have been one of those things that if it was getting play on the radio, it wasn't available in stores because that record is a rare record. Like, so I don't think they pressed a lot of them to sell.
No. The people were playing it and they couldn't get it.
It was blocked.
In other words, the whole thing, I don't think
it was blocked.
Don and Rick really knew what they had.
So the group... No? The group.
Some things that happened, and they put it on the shelf.
So the group...
With bad management, so it was shelved.
So the group kind of...
That was it.
Yeah, well, see, the records at that time made it possible for you to get live gigs where you could make some money.
Right,
right.
You had families to support.
Exactly.
Consequently, you had to make other arrangements. That's how that picture worked out.
So you're saying because people couldn't get the records, you couldn't support your families and get gigs?
We wasn't getting paid.
Hey, that's one of the reasons. B, I told you, poor management.
Yep.
It's like Catch 22, right?
Because if they could have been able to buy the record the way they were playing it, because they was playing it every day, off and on, you know, all through the day, all of the DJs was playing it, you know, but no one could obtain it. They couldn't buy it. So couldn't buy it. We couldn't make any money.
Okay.
Don't want to get off air. I'll tell you something else.
Okay. Well, so let me. So then the group kind of drifted apart.
Yeah.
So Shirley, did you ever do any music stuff after that?
No. What I did, I went back to church.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I didn't do anything else after that. After me and the group, we broke up as far as, you know, singing and stuff. So I went back to singing gospel.
And Robert, did you ever do any music stuff after the group broke up?
No, I went back to church also.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well.
Send us back to church.
Okay, well, let me play the other side, which is I'm in a Need, and then we'll talk to Billy about his solo career. So this is Shirley and her Squires with I'm in a Need. Okay, that was just Shirley and her Squires with a track called I'm in a Need, and that track was the last record that they released on the Constellation label. It had a really nice, almost Etta James type of sound, and we were just talking about how after that record, the group kind of drifted apart, and Billy McGregor was just talking about how after that record, he had gone and started to pursue a solo career. So, Billy, can you start telling that story about how that happened? You said you were writing a song for somebody else.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Shy. I was writing, Mr. Shy, as you can recall, I was writing it for Ruby Andrew. It wouldn't have been Mr. Shy. It would have had another title, you know.
It would have been Mrs. Shy?
Something like that, yeah. And Don Clay, he liked the way I was teaching it to her. He liked me singing it better, and I ended up singing it. He asked me to record it, and that's how I ended up recording it.
Did you play piano on that also?
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. No.
So you had no intention of becoming a solo artist, and then he convinced you?
Today I don't. I love songwriting. I like Paul Revere to put that letter in the mailbox.
Okay. And then it became kind of a classic Chicago record, Mr. Shy.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was doing a lot of writing over Sonny Sawyer, you know. I love putting a project together. I love sound, you know.
Okay, well, I got to play Mr. Shy before we talk more, just because it's such a classic Chicago record. So actually, let me ask. So this did it become an immediate hit as soon as it hit the radio?
Yeah. Eddie Silver, he's dead. Now he did the arrangement on it. Well, I gave him the arrangement. He took the credit.
And the record label it came out on is Flash Records. Was that Don Clay?
Yes. Yeah.
Did Phil Orsi have something to do with the label?
I think so. They kept me away from the administrative part of it, you know. And but you know how they go. Bob, he spoke the story a few minutes ago.
Okay, so you're saying you were just an artist.
You know, I was green at the time, you know, like most artists back then. You know, if you didn't know nothing, they'd take you.
Do you remember what year Mr. Shy came out?
I think it was 68. I think we recorded it on the night Martin Luther King got killed. And we had to rush from downtown.
Okay. Yeah. So that was years after Shirley and the Squires drifted apart.
Yeah.
So had you been doing songwriting for a while? Like, what were you doing in that period in between the group broke up?
Songwriting.
Had you written for other people before?
Trying to write for people. I wrote for the Shylights too, you know. I got a song on one of their albums too.
Before Mr. Shy came out?
No.
So
afterwards.
So you had been trying to do songwriting and were unsuccessful getting stuff placed.
Exactly.
So, and then your first attempt, you were trying to get something placed with Ruby Andrews, and you were dealing with Don Clay.
Yeah.
And he's like, why don't you record it on yourself?
Well, you're right, exactly. That particular song, it was for her, but it would have been Mrs. Shy.
Okay.
And Don, he liked the way I sing. He said, why don't you do it? He didn't like the way Ruby was doing it.
Okay.
And that's how I ended up doing it, you know.
You're saying she actually attempted to sing it, and then he had you sing it instead.
Right.
Okay, well, let's play the record, which became an all-time classic Chicago record. This is Billy McGregor with Mr. Shy. Okay, that was just Billy McGregor with his big hit, his first record, his first solo record called Mr. Shy, which became a breakout hit when you were saying it was supposed to be for Ruby Andrews.
Exactly.
And then and then you release it on yourself. And you were saying that it was arranged by Eddie Silvers.
Right.
Does that mean the Wonderful Musicians played on the record?
Well, I guess whoever he called in to do it, you know, because they had recorded the track when they called me at work and told me to come down and to do the vocal.
Okay.
So when they cut the track, I wasn't there.
Okay.
But I had given the arrangement to Eddie, you know.
And do you remember how high it got on the charts in Chicago?
Oh, it was for 2 or 3 days, number one. 2 or 3 days.
And did it go pop and R&B?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It took off here in Chicago. Next thing I know, Gary was playing it regular, you know, and it kind of went on its own a lot. You know, even Randy Records and WLAC Nashville, Tennessee, I got it on radio one night, and Randy Records was playing it. JR, are you familiar with these people, Randy Records in Nashville, Tennessee?
I think it's one of, like, the 50,000 watts.
Exactly,
stations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So did you ever tour or perform?
Oh, yeah, I did. And I did some things with Ruby Andrews, and I did some stuff with Gene Chandler, you know, all down in Alabama places, you know.
Off of Mr. Shy.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. So what was your, where what type of tour, you did like the Chitlin' Circuit?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So did you do like one big tour with Ruby Andrews and Gene Chandler, or how many tours did you do?
No, just the one for each one of them I did, you know. And another few little things, like Jump Jackson used to book us all up through Iowa and places, you know. He was a booking agency too, Jump Jackson was.
Okay, mm-hmm. Which is interesting because you wrote one record for Jump Jackson's
yeah.
LaSalle label by a group called The Summits, which
I don't remember writing it.
So then one thing that's weird is they released a very obscure follow up record on Flash Records She's a Yum Yum, which is a Charlie Rich cover.
Yeah.
Whose idea was it to do that?
Don Clay. Well, I like country western stuff anyway, you know.
Okay.
Here's some of the original stuff I got at home. Man, you bust your side. But I love country western, but that was Don's idea.
But nothing happened with that record, right?
No. Well, anything Don had his hand on.
After listening to Billy play piano at his studio, mm-hmm. I would certainly think he'd end up on something from Nashville, you know.
I love them to death.
So then you started working. The next record you released came out on the Palos label, is that right? It's called
Been in Love?
We've Been in Love Much Too Long.
Yeah, then I did a thing on the USA with Doris Young.
Yeah, can we talk about the Palos thing first?
Yeah.
So the Palos label, it was run by Sonny Sawyer, right?
Yeah.
How did you get hooked up with him?
Through Don.
Okay.
Yeah. How happened? He was a pressing plant. He had a pressing plant over there for 45s, and they were pressing Mr. Shy over there. And I went over and just started hanging around. And Sonny saw you. He said, "Man, say you play piano?" I said, "A little bit." Me and Jerry Mondo. He used to sit there all day long. You know Jerry, don't you?
Well, he was a white. He had a rock group.
Yeah, Jerry Mondo. We were talking about it today, and
yeah.
And I got hooked up with him like that, and he would give me a few dollars every week. Just to sit over there and write, you know.
So you were a writer for Sonny Sawyer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he ended up recording you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you recorded this record, which is a really nice record, called We've Been in Love Much Too Long.
Yeah. Great, great Jerry Butler song. He could have made a smash out of that.
You're saying it's Jerry Butler style,
yes.
style song.
Yes, yeah.
And there's backup singers on this, too.
Yeah.
Who's singing Robert backup?
Robert Bailey.
Yeah.
And a young girl named Virgin Noel. She's dead now. And that's about it. Two boys are singing along with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So one of the original Squires is backup on this record.
Yeah, Robert Bailey.
Okay, well, let me play this record and we can talk some more.
Okay.
So this is Billy McGregor with We've Been in Love Much Too Long.
Get along with you. I get no appreciation, no matter what I do. And I think we've been in love much too long. We've been in love much too long. We have our
You gotta be a good man to stay as long as I stay. When things are going just right for the day, you change the mood up with the words you say, and I think
we've been in love much too long. We've been in love much too long. We've been in love much too long. We've been in love much too long.
Oh, I don't know what's wrong, but I know something's going on. I can truly say something just ain't right, and I can feel it, girl. It's hard to fight. We've been in love much too long. We've been in love much too long. I wanted to leave you without a doubt in the mind. You changed my plans, girl, by treating me so kind. When things are going just right for the day, you changed the mood, girl, with the words you say, and I think
we've been in love much too long.
We've been in love so long. We're getting too far. We've been in love too long.
Okay, that was just Billy McGregor with a record he released on the Palos label called We've Been in Love Much Too Long. Do you remember what year that came out?
It was after we came back from out there, so it had to be. We came back when?
63. Which came off the road and didn't go back no more?
63.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, that came out after Mr. Shy. Yeah. It came out after Mr. Shy, so probably you have to be around 69 or 70.
Yeah,
right?
It was, yeah.
So,
it was. It had to be 69. Yeah.
Okay, and then. And then you did some songwriting for Palos,
yeah,
also.
Quite a few. Yeah.
And then the next record you released came out on the USA label, and it had two sides. One was called Thank Your Mother and Your Father, which would be appropriate today for Father's Day.
Yeah.
Which maybe.
No.
And then the other side was, well, My Turn Now came out on
Melatonin. Yeah.
And then the other side was a duet with Doris Young, who was one of Sonny Sawyer's artists.
Right.
And that was called We Could Come Over with Love.
Yeah. We Can Overcome.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Survive the Mighty Storm with Love.
So do you, and I think Nat Meadows had something to do with that,
yeah,
that too.
Totally, yeah.
So which came out first, the Melatonin one, which was Nat Meadows' label, or the USA one?
USA.
Okay.
Yeah, USA.
And so was the USA through. So obviously the USA, you did it with one of Sonny Sawyer's artists, but was it through Nat Meadows? And who was Nat Meadows, and how did you meet him?
I met Nat Meadows, is the cousin of Sil Johnson.
Okay.
And then I knew Sil well, you know, that's how I met him.
Okay.
And he heard Doris sing one day, and he liked her voice, and he and I always was tight, you know. I kind of met him at the Doc Fish on 87th Street through his cousin, Sil Johnson, you know, and that's how we hooked up together.
Okay. Uh-huh. And then Nat ended up releasing another record on you, which is a really great record called It's My Turn Now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. On his Melatonin.
Yeah.
Record label.
Right.
And did that get some play in Chicago?
Yeah, very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah, it did real good.
So that was one of your hits, too.
Yeah, actually, I worked that record pretty good. I worked it pretty good, you know. And got quite a few shows out of it.
Local shows or national shows?
Yeah, I did a few national things with it, you know.
And so what type of places did you go?
I played a lot of supper clubs with that, too, you know. In Cleveland, different places. You know, I've been around on that particular record. I think I played more places on that than I did Mr. Shy.
Oh, really? On
yeah.
It's My Turn Now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever appear on TV? As Billy McGregor?
Yeah, Mr. Shy.
What TV shows did you go on?
Don Kennedy's, my local Soul Train.
Okay.
Yeah, Channel 26.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you have so many records you were involved with. I just want to sort of start asking about some of the stuff, and then we can play some of the music you were involved with. So one thing is your brother recorded a record on the Twinight record label as George McGregor and the Bronzettes. And then you and your brother recorded as the McGregor brothers on the Flip.
Right.
So was that must have been like 70 or 71, right?
It had to be, yeah.
Do you remember how that happened?
I wrote a song and it sounded like he should sing it.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's how that happened. And the Bronzettes was the girls were singing background. We just made up a name for them. Some girls that we picked, you know.
Because there was a Bronzettes group that I have a photo of them, actually. There were four girls.
Okay.
And they cut another record also called Moments Like This.
You got a photo here?
I could send it to you. There's four girls.
Okay, yeah.
But I'll send it to you.
Okay.
But so you're saying that the Bronzettes, you just made up their name at that time?
I think I'm right, you know. Yeah, we made that up. And I was dealing with a guy named Jerry Jones. Are you familiar with him?
Jimmy Jones?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a big writer, and he wrote for Wonderful.
No, this guy's a producer.
Jerry Jones?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know him.
No, okay.
So, and one thing to clarify is you also have a cousin named George McGregor who's different than your brother?
Yeah, he's out of Motown, a drummer from Motown.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your cousin lives in Detroit?
No, he lives in Jackson, Tennessee now. He was just here last week, you know. The drummer, he played on a lot of stuff in Motown, you know.
So your cousin is a very important Detroit musician and producer.
Yes,
who is different than your brother, who's also named George.
Right.
So I just wanted to clarify that.
Right.
And so I wanted to talk about some of the stuff that you wrote also, because you wrote so much material for some people. So one label that you wrote a lot of stuff for is you wrote for the All Teen record label.
Yeah.
And you wrote for a group called Drake and the Insolids. And
I helped them arrange. I didn't write for them. I helped them arrange stuff. You know, I wrote for Robert Taylor.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think you had writing credits on at least one of the Drake and the Insolids sides.
I don't know. If it is, it's news to me.
Okay.
But leave it there.
Okay. So who ran the All Teen label, and how'd you get involved with them?
Meeks. And these were like policemen. All these guys were policemen. They, who had Jo Armstead and her husband Colin?
Mel Collins.
Yeah, he died. Yeah, he was a former policeman too. And Meeks.
Bill Meeks.
Bill Meeks, yeah. 82nd and Stony Island, and a couple other other guys that were there, you know.
And they also, you wrote a song for that they released on the Globe label by the Creations called "Oh Baby."
Yeah. Yeah,
and you also it was that same song was released by a group called the Classics.
Classics, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Called "One Dance."
One dance, I started to make a little baby.
And that was a great song.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember which came out first, the Classics or the Creations?
Creations.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how about I play that song and we can talk some more? So, but they didn't actually credit you on the Creations version. They didn't put your name on it, even though they should have. So this is the Creations with "Oh Baby."
Oh, baby.
Okay, that was just The Creations with a record that Billy McGregor wrote called Oh Baby, and it was actually called One Dance, and Billy just reminded me that that was actually recorded three times, and it was actually released in the early 60s by an Evanston artist named Rick Lee, and that actually came out on the Boss label, which actually I have that too. I'll send you a recording of that too. And the real title of the song is called One Dance. Again, some of the artists you recorded records and wrote songs for were Drake and, well, you said you arranged for Drake and the Exiles.
Exactly, yeah.
You wrote a song for Robert Taylor, which, who was Robert Taylor?
He was just an artist that popped up there, and I haven't heard anything about him anymore. You know, I did the arrangement on, and by that time, Mixing, they were going out of business.
Okay, you're saying All Teen Records went out of business.
Right, yeah.
And there was a Robert Taylor from Milwaukee, and that's not the same guy.
May not be, right.
Okay. And there's a record by the CODs, but you're saying you don't remember writing that song.
No, I don't.
And then you wrote, there's that Summits record, which you said you don't remember, but I'll play it for you later. let me play next... the Antennas record, Be Yourself, just because that's a great record that you guys did.
Okay.
And this interview is about the Antennas, so I wanted to make sure we get that in.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then I'll ask more about what you guys are doing today. Okay, so this next song I'm going to play is the Antennas with Be Yourself. Okay, that was just the Antennas with the flip side of their very first record called Be Yourself. And if you're just tuning in, I have Billy McGregor and members of the Antennas here in the studio and on the phone. So that record, I guess it got released in 1963. And we're just talking to Billy and playing all the music that he was involved with. So, Billy, can you talk a little bit about everything we've been playing was done in the 60s and the early 70s. So can you talk about what you've done since the early 70s?
I travel a lot with the band, you know. I work with a lot of different bands and done a lot of songwriting. You know, I got my own studio, and I'm just trying to get something out there on somebody, you know.
So what did you do, like, from, like, 75 to 80?
Steel mill.
You worked in a steel mill?
Yeah, 30 years on steel mill. I was doing stuff.
Was it in Chicago or in Indiana?
Yeah. I worked at Ingersoll Products on the 19th and Morgan.
Okay.
29 and a half years I worked there, you know. And but I was working, doing local shows.
So you were still doing music locally?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah.
And did you write or release any music between, like, 1975 and
1995?
For those 20 years, did you write and release or release any music?
77, the thing on the Shylights.
Oh, you released this track on the Shylights?
Well, it was on called Don't Blame the World.
Okay, is it on one of them?
It's on the album. It's on the album. It was on the album at the time, you know.
Okay, was it on 20th Century?
No, Brunswick, was it?
Was on Brunswick at that time?
I believe it was, yeah.
Okay.
Under Leo Astell.
Leo Astell?
Astell, yeah. You know him?
Yeah.
Yeah, he dead now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hooked up with him, and he got me a deal with the Shylights.
Okay.
Brunswick, yeah.
And did you do any other writing for any other artists between 1975 and 1995?
Come help God. Thanks, so much. Not that I know of.
Okay.
Not that I know of.
But you did play with different bands?
Oh, yeah.
What are some of the bands you played with?
One in particular, Chicago Rhythm and Blues King.
Who were they?
That's Big Twisted Old, the Mellow Fellows.
Okay.
They changed it to that name when he died.
Okay.
Yeah, so I worked with them a long time, man. Matter of fact, I just quit them, you know.
They released at least one record, right?
Yeah.
Are you on their record?
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay.
They had some stuff that they had already recorded when I joined them, you know, and stuff that I didn't like anyway, you know.
Okay.
But no, I worked with them. I've been everywhere with that band.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I made pretty good money, and then the money wasn't right either to you.
Okay.
Yeah. And I worked with a lot of local bands in the city, you know. And there it is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And are you trying to do any music today?
Well, I've been writing a lot of gospel stuff. It's a blessing, but ain't no money in gospel. But, yeah, I'm a musician. And I'm not exclusive when it comes to music. Anything will sell, I write it.
Okay.
Hillbillies, anything. You know what I'm saying? See, anything that'll sell.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm religious, but I'm not a saint. You understand what I'm saying? Ain't nothing wrong with me standing on the stage telling people how I love my woman. Is it?
You agree? Not that I don't see anything wrong with
you
that.
You agree? B.B. King still telling them, ain't he?
He's talking about
the
good
time. We'll see. No, I'm a songwriter, you know.
Okay, well, on that note, let me play another one of the great records. I mean, you wrote so many great records for yourself and other people, so you're a very talented guy. So I hope some other material that you write gets released by other artists.
I hope so, man.
Make your number available to us. So when they call,
yeah. you got it.
Okay, well, I'll play another one of your records, and then you can say if you want how people can contact you. So this next record is It's My Turn Now.
What I thought you would do. and I'm not going away.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You have been listening to the Sitting in the Park show, interview with Billy McGregor and members of the Antennas and the Squires. That was just Billy McGregor with his hit It's My Turn Now, which was a great record. And Billy, you were just telling me that it was actually the Pieces of Peace playing on it.
Yes, yes. Bernard Reed and the guys, you know.
And who was singing on it?
Me, Billy McGregor. Virgil, Noel, and Robert Bailey, and Doris Young.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was probably your biggest hit besides Mr. Shy.
Right. Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Well, thanks so much for writing and releasing so much great music. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
And thanks so much for coming down here and telling your story.
Anytime. Okay.
Okay, well,
thank you for having me.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And thanks, Robert, for coming up.
Yeah.
And thanks Shirley for having been on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Although she got disconnected, so but thanks so much. So this last record I'm going to play is appropriate for Father's Day, which is today. This is Billy McGregor with Thank Your Mother and Your Father.
Flowers and I baby.